Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Life of Pi podcast. With me is my accompanist in the show, as well as in life, it's Robin Rothman.
Hi, Sean.
So any updates for our show?
Well, our show is live online on edfringe.com. You can look up Life of Pi show, or it's just Life of Pi, and purchase your tickets there for the August 7th to the 15th. But also, you can purchase tickets on your website, lifeofpieshow.com.
Today's guest is Ryan Hervatten, a friend I've known since I was 12 years old.
And you talk about it a lot in your show, how when you were a military brat growing up, you had to move around to different cities a lot. Every 2 or 3 years, you were moving.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, that must have been hard because you had your best friend, and then after a few years, you had to up and leave and start all over again.
Yeah, I know that my story's not alone. I mean, any other military brat out there probably had a similar experience. It wasn't until my dad was stationed in MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa that my parents split up. And once my parents split up, me and my siblings stayed with my mom, and my dad continued moving with the Air Force. So I was able to stay in the same place for junior high and high school, which is kind of rare for military brats. But
yeah,
it was
finally
nice
got to put down some roots.
Yeah. And, you know, a friendship developed with today's guest, Ryan. We were on the same baseball team in Little League. We were in the beginning band together.
Mm-hmm.
we would go to hockey games. And eventually I had to get a job in high school, and he was working at Pizza Hut. So what better thing to do than to work alongside my best friend? And I took a job at Pizza Hut, my very first job.
That concludes the crust. Now on to the sauce.
We were on the same Little League team. We also ate at the same lunch table in high school. And I also worked alongside him at my very first job, which was at Pizza Hut. He also might just be responsible for my sense of humor, for better or for worse. So please welcome to the program, Ryan Hervatten.
Thank you. glad to be with you.
Is that accurate?
Is there going to be a pause here?
Yeah.
I mean, sense of humor, I would say probably for worse. Sorry, pal.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just remember you always like made me laugh. It was just, you used to do something that I don't even think you give yourself credit for, but you would coin things. You know how like in Cool Hand Luke, there was that guy, George Kennedy's character, he would always like name people.
Yeah.
He ended up calling Luke Cool Hand Luke.
He's the one that gave Cool Hand Luke the nickname. Yeah.
Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen that movie.
Right.
But I remember
That's also my motto in life, because he got that nickname because, you know, do you remember what the cool hand was?
I think
nothing.
Yeah.
Sometimes nothing can be a real cool hand.
Yeah. So that was another thing about you.
And that's also what I've got to give. Nothing.
You were a film buff before I knew film buffs. Like, I remember you used to like go to the Tampa Theater to watch foreign films before it was responded.
I did.
You weren't even required to. Like, I eventually did major in film in college. I majored in film, and you went to film school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
you
were into film at a much younger age, and it was contagious. You know, like I started liking it too. I remember I went with you to like the Tampa Theater to see a French film. Was it Ridicule?
That one? Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I think so. But it was a great film. You also took me there, and they were playing silent films, but they had someone playing the piano. You know?
Well, he used to do that before every show. It was the Mighty Wurlitzer Theater Organ, and he would come up from underneath the stage on like a hydraulic lift, and that was always a... You know, that's how they started every movie. Instead of previews, well, they did show a few previews, but you got to listen to this guy play the Mighty Wurlitzer, and then when he was done, he would go back. They would drop he'd go back through this hole in the stage floor. It was just fantastic.
See, I feel like
it was a magical place.
Yeah, I mean, you were like I don't know what to say, an adult, or you know, you were mature. You had like mature sensibilities.
I think I was more just like a loser. I would go to the movie theater by myself all the time because no one else probably had to drag you there. Did I have to drag you? I can't remember.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, but I then went voluntarily afterward because it's contagious. It was fun. You also played the guitar, I remember, and it was like I didn't know anyone who like. Were you self-taught on the guitar?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say that I'm any kind of a virtuoso or a player, but I can learn my bar chords. You know, I taught myself how to play the bar chords, and then didn't learn anything else after that.
We were hanging at your house one day, and I remember we were like, you were playing, and then we just recorded Back in Black from AC/DC, right?
Yeah. What else? Do you remember the other one we cut that day?
It was Phil Collins.
Touch. Yeah. Classic version of Invisible Touch. I still have that, I'm sure, somewhere.
Oh man, tape. You could probably use that for blackmail because we might have recorded the worst cover of that ever. I mean, maybe it was great.
Well,
but I wasn't.
I don't
much
think
of a
we were
singer.
Trying very hard to be good. So.
we were trying
to be kind of bad.
She seemed to have invisible touch. Like we just tried to do it exactly as a monotone. Yeah. But for some reason, this was exciting to us. We also had like a cheese party, right? Where you just had us over and we all brought cheese stuff and we just ate cheese.
Oh, at Christmas, it was, we had, I think what they call a Yule log, which I've never had, you know, before or since, which was a big cheesy long thing with, I want to say nuts. Yeah, and then we just had a bunch of cheese, and yeah, it was a cheesy Christmas party that year.
You know, another thing that you did with it was cool when we were in high school is that you had a girlfriend. never figured out how to do that in
part of the
high
time,
school.
You know, yeah.
But
you
she
know,
sure. wasn't just a girlfriend; she was someone who was like an exchange student from Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is just cool. It was just, I think that, I'm sure she had a name, but we just called her Australian Girl, right?
She did have a name. She still does. It's Joanne. I won't say her last name, but for privacy reasons. But yes, she was an awesome person.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool that you had a girlfriend. You were a film buff. You played guitar. You know, you were really good at baseball. And that wasn't even the sport that you lettered in high school. You were on the tennis team.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, and talking about how you coin names, I remember we were playing one time, and you said Netmaster R. And I was like, oh, that's interesting that he's called Netmaster R. I just don't play tennis enough to know. But it turned out that was your own nickname for yourself because you were really good.
I feel like I could have done better with that one. But,
well, that was a good one.
Maybe not my best nickname moment, but...
Well, your best was probably when you went ahead, and I think you and Mike McKinley both named everyone at the SS lunch table. For people listening in, that was our lunch table in high school.
Was a very exclusive club for only the coolest, most popular kids.
You were the captain, right?
Was I? I don't think so. I think Mike was the captain. Wasn't he Captain McFunky Beef? I feel like. I don't even remember my own nickname anymore.
Well, then you would have been the first mate. One of you was the captain. The other one was the first mate. And then I got dubbed Scurvy Dog. Scurvy Dog, yeah. Which I wore proudly. You know, of course, I knew scurvy was not a good thing to be called, but I embraced it. And now that I've gotten older, I know that scurvy is one of those things that's caused when you don't have enough citrus in your diet. And I don't think I had very much citrus in my diet. I primarily ate pizza, which brings us back to
segue.
Thank you. At the SS lunch table, you and, we'll say captain and first mate, whichever one was which, you and Mike were both working at Pizza Hut, not just any Pizza Hut, but the Pizza Hut that made the pizza for our high school. We were at Bloomingdale Senior High School. It was right next to the school, was this carry out and delivery place called Pizza Hut. And you were both working there. And I had just like gotten my license. I was a little older, but like, you know, I think I was 17 when I got my license. And I got a car too. Not like a brand new car, but like a very, very old car that the next door neighbor no longer used. It was a Plymouth Velari. And again, you coined it.
I think I used to call it the Behemoth.
Behemoth. And from then on, it was just the Behemoth. So you coined that as well. But like I had just gotten that car and now I could get a job. You know, I could drive myself to and from work and also to and from school. So I was really excited because then I got to work at Pizza Hut with two of my friends. Before we start talking about Pizza Hut, I'm kind of curious to know what got you hooked on pizza. Like, what was your pizza cognition?
Like early memories of pizza, you mean? Like
yes.
Formative pizza experiences.
Yes. Memories? When I met you, it was when we were in Valrico, Florida. But you're not originally from Valrico, Florida, right?
No, I'm from well, I was from Ohio, you know. But
so you're from Ohio, you know. and when was your first memory of pizza in Ohio?
I can't remember how old I would have been, but we went to a place where they had televisions and they were showing the movie Lady and the Tramp, I want to say, which I think is the Disney one where they're eating spaghetti and it's just romantic. And they were playing that movie, but also it was like you could see them making pizza, which I just thought was, you know, magical and just fascinating. So that's the earliest I can remember. I would have been a young lad at that time.
About how old?
Can't say the name of the place.
Like,
well, less than eight, I guess, probably.
Oh, right, because you moved to Florida when you were eight. So, before you were eight. So, you had this like memory of being in an Italian restaurant and watching people make pizza, and that there is something to that, like the hands on the dough and the toppings and the baking of the bread. It's just magical.
And they were throwing it up in the air and doing that whole thing, which to this day, it's like when you see people do that, it's like, I don't know how they do that. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's impressive. And if they do it too much, though, it thins out the center. So you got to.
I know the stakes. I know how hard it is.
You remember when
you never attempt it.
That was one of the first things I learned when I did get the job at Pizza Hut alongside you and first mate. At the time, Pizza Hut had three different styles of dough. It was the thin, the hand toss, and the pan. And the hand toss, the first thing they tell you is it's never hand tossed. Because they're just like, oh, the hand toss, that means you put it through the machine twice instead.
But you can't do that. Yeah. It's hard. It's like
and it thins out the center, and all of them
it's
were
a whole
cooked.
Technique.
Yeah, they were cooked in pans, you know. So you had to the hand toss. You were not really supposed to toss it with your hands. For someone though who has never worked inside a carryout and delivery Pizza Hut around the early '90s, how would you describe the operation?
Well, my memories are vague, Sean. You know, I'm not I'm not super great with memory of things, but I feel like it was, controlled kind of chaos. I just remember being on the make table and like phones, you know, back in those days, Friday night, it was, you know, that was the thing to do, was to order pizza Friday and Saturday night. I mean, it just the phones just ringing off the hook. And little orders being printed out. And we had a little make table, just a line that, you know, you just go down the line and try to keep up. And it was just like, you know, people, I don't want to say two or three, four people on the assembly line throwing ingredients on. And then you'd throw them into the oven, which was kind of perpendicular to that make table.
Yeah. And it was conveyor belt, right? A
conveyor belt. Yeah.
Electric oven, I think.
Yeah.
And it would, and when it came out, it was right by the cut table. So the people, like the delivery people would take the pizzas out of the oven, out of the conveyor belt, and take them out of the pan, put them onto the cut table, and then use that huge guillotine style, like blade, right. That rounded blade, which I am a proud owner of now. I have one at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I like making pizzas at home. It's not the same thing as like a Friday night in the suburbs, because Friday night in the suburbs, especially that Pizza Hut, man, we would get 400, 500 pies on a Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was all you could do to keep up. I don't know if it's still like that anymore.
I don't either.
I got a feeling it's probably not, because I feel like there's so many choices now. Back then, it wasn't like there was, you know, Papa John's and, you know, four other choices, I don't think. I mean, Pizza Hut was kind of the thing. We had Hungry Howie's and, I mean, I think that's all.
Maybe Domino's. Maybe
Domino's, yeah, but.
Yeah, and you're right.
I mean, Domino's back then, really. I mean.
Well, I remember Papa John's was sort of a new player at the time. It was like, oh, whoa, they're opening up a Papa John's. Because when I came back after freshman year of college, I came back to Valrico for summer, and I didn't want to get a job at that Pizza Hut anymore. But I heard that they were opening up a new Papa John's. And so I helped open up that Papa John's that was on Belle Shoals and Bloomingdale. I don't know if it's still there, but
oh, really?
If it is, you're welcome. You know,
nice work. Wow. You're like a legend of Bloomingdale Brandon pizza.
You know, after my sophomore year of college, I came back and had already worked at Pizza Hut and Papa John's. So I took a job at Hungry Howie's delivering pizza. Yeah, that puts a lot of miles on your car. But then I felt like, okay, now I've definitely seen it all now with Valrico, Florida pizza.
Yeah. You're like a seasoned pizza pro at that point.
I feel like one of the reasons why I didn't go back to Pizza Hut, and I don't even know if this guy was still there, but I cannot think of my memories of Pizza Hut without thinking about one night when it was just me and the manager, Don. We were closing. So it was just us. And we had done the thing that you do at the end of the night, which they say flip the table. You don't literally flip the table, but all of the bins that are in the make table where the sausage and the onions and the green peppers and the pepperonis, all of those are in their own separate bins, the different cheeses. And what you do is you put new product in the top of the bin, and then you take a brand newly cleaned bin, invert it on top of it, and then flip the bin. So all of the new product that you just put in is now at the bottom of the new bin, and all of the older product is on the top of the bin. So you've effectively flipped the table, you know. We had just finished doing that, and I was between where the make table was and the conveyor belt oven where you put the pizzas in the oven, and kind of like nowhere to go. And the manager had a huge knife, like one of those Crocodile Dundee style knives. Like, that's not a knife. This is not, you know.
Yeah.
And
this is Don you're talking about.
Yeah. And he held it towards me and like pointed at me. And the look in his eyes was like he's going to kill me. And I don't even know what I had said beforehand. I mean, I'm sure it was obnoxious. Again, you're responsible for my sense of humor, but I must have said something that triggered him. And he pointed that knife right at me as if he was going to kill me.
Was this a pizza-related knife, or was this just like a personal knife that he was carrying on him
for
self-defense or to threaten people?
Not sure. I would say that I don't know when we used the knife that big at Pizza Hut.
I don't remember having Crocodile Dundee knives there.
Right. Yeah, but so therefore it's even more suspicious. But for wherever that knife came from, whether it's from corporate or his own sheath, he was holding it. And it was
a knife.
Yeah, I was not going to question that. But I just remember being so petrified that, like, this guy's going to kill me, and no one's here. Like, the drivers had all gone for the night. I was just me and him. And all I did was just kind of, like, pretend, like, oh, this is a joke. I don't know where the punchline is here, but I'm just going to, like, laugh, you know, and just be like, that's funny. You're such a funny guy. And I remember having to do, like, two or three rounds of it, like, ha-ha. This is hilarious, you know, like funny, but I was just so scared. He eventually, like, I don't know, like snapped back. I like saw like a blink, and then he was like, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha, and then like kind of put the knife away as if like, it was like, great. That joke worked really well, according to you. I think if it was a joke, or at least you don't need to get rid of my body now because you didn't go through with the murder, but like, it was so scary.
Awkward.
Yeah, that was that. But it's hard for me not to think about that memory because it's so visceral. And it was like, I was so scared that I don't think I even like told anyone for like, you know, I was like, okay, I only got like two more shifts on Pizza Hut and then I'm going to be in college. I don't have to think about this anymore. I don't need to think about where, you know, what's happening.
So you don't have any idea like what provoked it? It was just like happened? Like he just was like,
yeah.
Wow. You must have flipped that table wrong or something. Did you put the old stuff on top? That's probably what happened.
So you're taking his side. I knew it. See, this is the problem.
I'm just asking questions. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I would venture to guess that, you know, I probably have some responsibility in that, because me and Mike and the others that came before you, I think, did our best to drive him insane with our complete and utter lack of respect for him and our lack of respect for the rules that he tried to impose. And
that is one of those things. I think, like, I remember working there for like a year and a half, and I never got a raise. I was still, it was minimum wage, $4.25 an hour, and I never, it never went up. And I was like, I think I'm doing a pretty good job here, aside from, you know, I guess I didn't flip the table well that night.
The cheese.
Before I let you go, I wanted to also give you credit for having, I want to say, sharpened my sense of humor, or created my sense of humor. But the thing was, is you were one of the few people in junior high, or especially in high school, that would also watch Dave Letterman every single night. I think that when I finally found out about improv comedy or sketch comedy, because we both also loved sketch comedy, right? Like The Kids in the Hall were both of our favorite. Yeah, so we had
Kids in the Hall, Monty Python. That was, I guess, that's all we had to go on, really.
Yeah, well, and Saturday Night Live, you know,
where Saturday Night Live, yes.
Yeah, and then eventually, I guess, The State. It's definitely like this is something that I find very attractive and want to be a part of, and I attribute it to you. And you're still one of my funniest friends that I've ever had. So. Thank you very much for joining me here on this podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Sean. I don't ever think of myself as funny. I just try to be the most chucklehead idiot that I can be. And that's, you know, I don't know.
There, you just coined, you coined another one.
I think more pragmatically about it. But
you just now coined your own nickname, Chucklehead Idiot.
Yeah, that's kind of me.
You've been listening to the Life of Pi podcast with your host, Sean Taylor. Theme song written and performed by Robin Rothman. To make sure you never miss a slice, head over to lifeofpieshow.com to subscribe.